today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim, what are all those instruments all set up there in the family room? Are you having a party or something?
Yeah, Patrick, you got your invitation, right? No? Maybe it got lost in the mail. No, you know what? I gave it to the bish and he was supposed to give it to you. Or maybe your dogs ate it. Yeah, that's it. I'm going with the dogs ate it.
I never got invited.
Well, you're here now. So here we are. It's a Rock in the Suburbs house party.
Yeah! Oh, yeah.
With special guests.
Yeah, special guests.
Dot Dash.
That is correct.
Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having us. Good
Absolutely.
To be here.
I don't know if you're quite ready for this. The level of excitement that you're, you know, expressing right now.
Yeah, no. I'm fired up.
Quite ready to go. All right.
Going nuts.
So... This is Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lennon.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us are the members of Dot Dash. Please introduce yourselves.
I'm Hunter.
Terry Banks.
Danny Ingram, drums.
See, right, the position, right? You have to say
that's right.
Where you work, what your position is. That's very good.
Gemini.
And I mentioned we're the house party, so we're doing the suburban house party. We haven't done this in a while.
No, we haven't. It's been a while. We're at your place, Jim. I think the last one we did was Belle Adair sometime earlier this year.
A while ago, but a few of the people here in the crowd were at that one, right?
Yeah.
The Belle Adair people, you guys enjoyed that.
It's a who's who of Rockin' the Suburbs listeners and fans out here. It's really cool.
So we have a bunch of folks here in the house, and then we also have... some Facebook Live going on too. Mm-hmm. So we'll
hello Facebook.
If you hear this on the podcast, we'll post some of those videos
right.
Online, and you'll be able to see that too.
So, yeah.
But welcome, Facebook Live viewers. All right. So we are global now. Dot Dash.
Yes, DC Trio.
DC Trio, Power Pop.
Mm-hmm. With you guys have all been in various bands. Going back to the late 80s, early 90s, is that right, more or less, Danny? Earlier than that?
A little earlier than that for me. I guess I'm the grandfather of the group.
You kind of are. I mean, you were in Youth Brigade, right?
Yeah.
Way back in the early days of the D.C. scene. Did you grow up in D.C.?
Yeah, I was born and raised in D.C., grew up in Southeast, and then moved to Northwest Palisades area where I met... Nathan Strachek, who's been my best friend since I was like 13 years old,
right.
and went to Wilson High School where all the Discord kids went. So, yeah.
And you were saying earlier before we turned these mics on that you once worked at the 930 Club before it was even called the 930 Club, right?
Yeah, the Atlantis Club. Paul Parsons hired me to be sort of a de facto greeter and keeper of the peace, even though I was underage. So I basically got paid to sit around and drink and make sure that there was no trouble.
Did you ever throw anyone out onto F Street?
No, I was usually too drunk. But I nearly got thrown out several times myself.
Yeah, so. That's not how that's supposed to work, I don't think. And Terry, you've been in a lot of bands too, but you know, it's interesting. Some of those bands, that one I really like called Treefort Angst, that I don't know if a lot of people know, but that was a really cool project from the early 90s. Julie Ocean is another one.
Yep.
There's a band called St. Christopher, if anyone's really
from
into
England.
Sort of English pop. Yeah. But this group is the longest time you've ever been in a band?
Yeah, for sure. We've been going for... 7, 8 years, something like that. You know, it's almost kind of embarrassing, like how long we've been doing it, but it's still been
right
fun.
Word.
It's still been fun, you know, and we've had a lot of records come out on a little label from Canada called The Beautiful Music, which has been an incredible boon to us because it's sort of inspiring that, you know, that they like what we do and they're like, put another record out.
And,
you know?
And tell the people here in that 8 years time, how many albums have you released?
Six. We had one in 2011, then 2012 and 13, and then 15 and 16, and then one at the end of this summer. So six albums.
That's like Neil Young level output.
And
quality.
I mean, it's been
and
the thing that's really been really cool is I was telling I think Patrick before is that usually in indie stuff. I mean, having done other groups like the band called the Saturday People and a band called Glowworm and Treefort Angst was certainly this case. And like stuff with St. Christopher, it just like it takes so long because indie labels are sort of a labor of love. It's like really, like, if it comes out like within a year of the time you've given it to the label, that's pretty good.
Oh, that's fast.
You know, like, I had this equation that was like label speak. Whatever they say, it's double that plus a season. So like, you know, we can't do it right away, but like within 6 months. So that's 12 months plus 3 months a season. It's 15 months. Or like, I'm putting it out next month is would be 5 months.
Right.
The incredible thing about our stuff is it comes out like, you know, he gets it pressed up and stuff like 2 weeks after we've sent it, which is kind of like how it's supposed to be. Like, you know, like, because it used to be like your records were like retrospective. Just retrospective. And the band was broken up by the time the record came out. It comes out like sort of concurrent with it. So that's been really, really fun.
That was definitely the Discord thing. All the Discord bands, most of them put their records out after they were broken up.
That's right. Yeah. You weren't any good if you hadn't broken up by the time your record came out.
I think Youth Brigade lasted all of about 6 months.
So. Yeah, right.
So why don't we hear something from the new record?
Yeah, absolutely. So
The new record is Proto Retro. Just came out a few months ago, right?
Yeah, it came out at the end of July, beginning of August. End of July, I think it was. Yeah.
So I'm going to start with the single.
Cool.
Unfair Weather.
Jumper, you know it's a sweater. Stop saying cheers, no one says that here. You started out laughing, ended in tears. It goes off and on. It's hair, it's jumper, you know it's a sweater. Stop saying cheers, no one says that here. Started out laughing, ended in tears. It goes off and on. It's here, it's gone.
All right, Unfair Weather.
Wow, such control over the crowd.
People are going nuts.
Can you come over and work with my 16-year-old?
If only I had such control in real life. But podcast gym, that's a whole different story. So this record has been described by the music press that loves Dot Dash as sort of a return to your jangly sound, right?
Yeah, a return and probably a maximization of it's like it's more jangly and poppy than any of the others. Maybe the third one is pretty kind of like this one too, sort of. But it's definitely like the poppiest and sort of brightest of the records. The last one before this one was and I like that one, but it's like. You know, it's sort of like sort of a crazy sort of off the rails thing. But this one is, it's poppy and boppy.
So what's going on in your world that makes you embrace that kind of sound right now? I mean, I think a lot of people today are sort of going the other direction and becoming more depressed about the way things are going. But
I'm depressed about it.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's kind of, the album cover. All the other records that we've had all have these kind of like dreamy, abstract kind of covers, the art. And I just thought we can't have like you know, a street light at night. You know what I mean? Like, it has to be something freaky and weird. So I saw this blown up building downtown. Right. And it doesn't really look like our music sounds. I mean, it's right. it looks like a, I was saying to somebody else, like a bad Joy Division Dutch bootleg. You know what I mean? Where you can see, like, the guy's like, this is going to look good. Well, you know?
But it looks like Washington, D.C. falling apart, which is a metaphor. Yeah, so I mean, I just felt
like,
anyway,
but I mean, I guess you were saying why. I don't know. Like, yeah, if you're older, you're supposed to do like Nick Drake, like, ooh, and I just.
You don't like Nick
I wouldn't
Drake?
Want to do that sort of music. I'd rather just do the kind of, you know, energetic stuff.
Yeah. Make it snappy, make it peppy, right?
Yeah, none of those lovers lament crap.
That's right.
Nice Oneiders reference.
That's right. So for guys that have been in a lot of different bands, and you know, given the availability of home recording equipment, do you guys prefer to go into a studio now and work, or do you like to do it on your own pace at home?
We do the opposite of what a lot of people do. Like, as you say, with the advent of easy recording stuff, is, you know, the thing is, like, do it in your friend's basement and take you know, a year and a half. And like, we do our equation is to go to like the proest studio we can with the proest person behind the board, and then do it in like a day and a half.
Oh, okay.
Like, in like every record we've done in a weekend. This one we did in 3 days.
Well, wow. Truthfully, Hunter and I do it in about 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, like, really, like, I mean, the third one was done in 1 day. That's not mixed, because then whoever's going to mix it, they're going to mix it
sure
when they get around to it. But
we did do one album like that, though. The first album was done in a friend's basement, at Eric Tischler's basement.
But that was
it was originally just going to be demos.
It was like 10 hours.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was like
total. 2 or 3 hours each time. So we do, like, this last one we did in a weekend plus an extra day. The one before that was like a day and a half. So instead of like doing it on the cheap, we do it on the cheap, but we do it in like a super pro studio, but we're only there like a day and a half. Mm. It sounds odd, but that's what we
do. Yeah, you rehearse the heck out of it.
Yeah, we just go in and just sort of play. Like, we did this record with Mitch Easter in his, he has this big pro studio in Winston-Salem, and I was talking to him kind of booking time, and I was like, we just want to do a weekend. And he's like, okay, you know, how many songs do you want to do? And I was like, 10. And he was like, that's a lot of songs. I mean, you know, I'm like, we can do it. He's like, bands always say that, you know. And then we did the first song, and it was like I took it as a big compliment. I had to go back into the control room, and he was like, you are going to be able to do this, because we just play it like, you know, and just stop.
That's like Ramones style, right? Do you do them in the actual track sequence too, the way the Ramones did?
Not really.
Just keep it running.
But we do it all. It's all recorded live, except the vocals are you know, redone.
Mm-hmm.
And then on this record, the extra guitar was redone because there's only one of me. But
yeah, and I wanted to ask Hunter to you about that. This new record was basically recorded as a trio. Previously, you have had second guitarists in some of your lineups. Has that changed your approach? Having to carry
he's rocking
more
the eight string bass is one thing, which I think adds a lot.
Really cool. More melodic, more responsibility on you for this album.
Yeah, I started playing the 8-string bass because, frankly, I couldn't play the 12-string bass very well at all.
There is such a thing as a 12-string bass.
He has a 12-string bass.
There is. I've seen this with
actually, but it's really hard to play, so I had to play.
I would imagine. Cheap Trick style, right?
Yeah. I don't know how Tom Peterson's, like, 68-year-old fingers can make it work like that. But the only thing I could play on the 12-string on this was gray, blue, green, because that's pretty simple. Mm-hmm. And then I played 8-string on the rest. I was actually going to play 4-string on a couple of the songs, but when I took it out of the case, my teenage son had messed it up somehow.
Ooh, so imagine that.
So I had to play the 8-string on everything.
but did you feel more responsibility to play more melodic or carry more of the songs?
No, I kind of do the same thing all the time. It just sounds a little fuller played on an 8-string than rather on a 4-string.
Right. Okay. I love the bass playing on this new record, the way that everything locks in, and it's going to be a real treat to watch you guys play here in Ashburn.
I want to ask a question about that too, is Patrick and I have talked about this. When you have just a three-piece like you guys, that changes the way you have to play the bass, right? You have to be more melodic as a bassist, don't you think?
I mean, honestly, I'm kind of playing the same thing that I always played on all the songs. It's just you can hear it a little better now.
Okay. That's the key.
Yeah. You know, a lot of lead guitar players, you know, they have a lot of good aspects to them, but a lot of them just like to solo over everything.
Right.
And that doesn't leave a whole lot of room for the bass. you know, sort of a subtler, more sophisticated instrument, one that really...
Of course. Actually takes the musicianship and skill to play.
That's right.
I know what you mean.
Did I mention my 15-year-old son filled in for him at one of our shows?
Is that true?
Learned all of his bass parts in about 2 hours and was able to I kid you not. But this is not an indictment of Hunter. It actually is a testament to the exquisite simplicity that is Hunter's bass.
Because you've insulted me, I'm going to tell my favorite Dot Dash story.
Okay.
We played this really
fun... What's the next question?
we played this really fun show in a someone's basement down on 14th Street. And there were a bunch of young, enthusiastic punk rockers there. And so we were playing. We were having a nice time. And I was like, you know, it's so wonderful to be in a band, you know, with your dad. And I'm like, you know, he's back there playing the drums. And it's always been my dream to play with...
They believed it, too. I could see the people, and they were like, huh. Because
Danny's nickname in the band is Pops. So, you know, I was pretty clearly joking, I thought. But after we were done, this dude with a mohawk comes up to me, slaps me on the back and goes, "Your old man was f***ing killing it on the drums."
That's beautiful. All right, Junior, that's enough out of you.
So that is kind of interesting. Are you all parents around the table?
Yes.
Yeah.
And what is the reaction in general from your offspring to you guys still cranking it out, you know, six albums into, you know, your fourth or fifth band, you know, and no signs of slowing down?
My 12-year-old really doesn't have much interest in it. You know, I think when he gets older, maybe he'll have some sort of appreciation for it. My 16-year-old, he's 16 now. He digs it, and he started his own band as well. And he's,
cool.
You know, at 16, he's already a much better musician than I ever have been or ever will be. So,
drummer,
Guitar player,
Okay,
but like I said, he filled in on bass for one of our shows, so he's good.
Yeah, my kids are into it. I mean, they've seen us play at Fort Reno a couple times. I mean, going back a few years, and yeah, I think they're just used to it. You know what I mean? I just think they sort of feel like, oh, that's a thing, like old dudes do.
That's what he's done.
Yeah.
Connor, what about your children? What do your kids think of this musical adventure, man?
I'm not sure that that impressed, but when my son was in sixth grade, actually, he went into school on Monday, and his teacher was like, "Is your dad in a band?" And I guess she had seen us on Saturday night. She must have remembered me from parent-teacher conferences. So
that's pretty cool.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
You didn't make out with him, did you?
Oh. Hey, this is a family show. Come on.
Well, hey, not always.
All right. So, not always.
That would have made the next parent-teacher conference.
I think it was
awkward.
A male teacher.
Okay, so we're going to do a quick little promo break.
Yes,
we like to do a little promo for our show.
We do.
Sometimes. And, you know, people are watching and people are listening and they, you know, want to spread the word. So I need a volunteer. You don't have any lines. You just have to, you know, be a prop, basically. So can I get a volunteer from the audience here to help with this
promo? Not everybody at once.
Come on. I see Nick.
Right on.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, so we need to get Brian on camera.
Brian.
Can we see him on camera?
Come over here.
Okay. All right. There he is. Are we good? Is he on camera now? Okay. All right.
You
ready?
Hold the mic up for him?
There's just
no line.
He said there's no line.
There's no line. Nobody else speaks this way.
I volunteer.
There's just one. All right. All right.
Just gesticulate frantically.
I'm just making you uncomfortable. So.
No. It's all good.
Brian Brewhouse, everyone.
Yay. Back in the USA.
He flew in from Manila.
Yes.
For this.
Yes. Wouldn't miss it.
That was a few months ago you flew in.
Seeing when that was.
Yeah. Okay. Look at this poor soul, listless, spiritless, some would say dead inside. He lacks the basic sustenance for an enjoyable life, quality music conversation. Every day, so many people like this must head out from their suburban communities, trapped like lemmings in shiny metal boxes, and all without a single mention of great rock, R&B, or country music. For them, it is agony. All they want is for someone to help. Please, will you show them you care? Your support can bring audio aid to those in need. You can help right now by telling someone about Rockin' the Suburbs. All it costs is only $0 per month. We're doing everything we can to end the outrage of people living without quality music conversation. But the reality is that these lost souls need you now. Rockin' the Suburbs knows how to revive their broken spirits, but we can only save them if someone cares enough to share the love of music. Pick up your phone and make a difference by just calling, texting, or social media-ing someone and telling them about Rock in the Suburbs. You can provide the high-energy audio that they need to keep their ears and minds healthy. No person should be doomed to suffer this way. Let them know you care. Tell them about Rock in the Suburbs every day.
Every day. Thank you. If anyone only be gamble aware when the fun stops.
You did
stops.
Great, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
He nailed it, man. I was really was good. I believed it.
His listless, spiritless.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Was perfect for that. Okay, so let's so we're talking about you guys going into the studio and, you know, just knocking the songs out and everything. So I was looking, you know, one of the great things about the streaming music is you can just go through the whole catalog and you can look at all the songs over the six albums. And if my calculations are correct here, going through your catalog, I think you have two songs over 4 minutes long, or from six albums. Everything else is, there might be a few even in the 3 minute range, but most of them are probably even under that, right?
Yeah, most are in the less than 3 minutes.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Why?
I'm old. I'm forgetful. It's really hard for me to remember anything beyond three. And, exactly.
Now, I just like short songs. I mean, I remember back when, when vinyl, which nobody called it vinyl then. It was just records,
that's right?
Yeah, you know?
That's right.
And also, like in high school, like if, you know, like if you got the new Clash album, like no one was like, ooh, is it on vinyl? You know what I mean? Like, you know, I mean, but anyway. But I can remember in Plan 9 and places in Baltimore and stuff, like you pull out records and like I'm like, oh, this band looks all right. And then you look at the things. And if the lengths are all like 454, 516, yeah. No. But you want to see like 207, 210, 214, maybe like they close it out with 255.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? Like that's the wild, like crazy, you know, sort of apocalyptic one. So I just think, I just like short songs. And maybe it's a 60s thing, like a 60s poppy kind of thing. Like, you know, I like a lot of that kind of stuff. So, I just think short songs are good. But hopefully not like snippets, you know, where it's like, it just stops or something. Like I want them to have a beginning, right, a middle, and an end, but just to be not, sort of concise.
Not,
you know,
the Robert Pollard style.
Yeah, like where it's just sort of like, you know, he just turns off the boombox. Right. You know, right. I don't like that.
No, your songs have
I like
real...
it to be like a full thing, but just
yeah,
concise.
No, your songs have that real power pop structure. Right?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it's interesting, too. I was thinking about, looking at some of these bands that you guys have played with and thinking about the fact that DC is really mostly well known as a hardcore city and maybe for go-go. But there's mm-hmm. been an incredible pop, you know, pop songwriting scene and power pop scene here. And, you know, what I think would be cool, Jim, is to put together a little compilation of some of these other bands that you guys have all been in and play some of those songs to kind of expose those for people, which would be really cool. But Danny, you were in a band called Strange Boutique that I think is kind of a very overlooked band in DC. You guys played a lot of different styles. Little goth was in there.
Some people
at times,
called it goth.
Right? Yeah. And had a powerful female front woman, you know, who I can still remember being like, wow, that's, you know, really cool. You don't see that a lot in this town. But originally the band was called Madhouse.
Right. Yeah.
And then you sold the name of the band. Is that right?
Yeah. I owe that to my good friend Skip Groff at Yesterday and Today Records.
Yeah.
Madhouse was the ex Mrs. Ingram and I and a couple of my friends. And it was us sort of breaking out of the DC hardcore mold because we weren't really happy with how the scene was becoming sort of macho and male dominated and aggressive and so forth. And we wanted to do something a little bit different. And so we had this band, we put out one album and we put out a single on Derek Shoe's label Fountain of Youth. And, we had already decided we were going to break up and start something new with Fred Smith, who was in Beefeater and another veteran of the Discord scene, and Steve Willett.
Mm-hmm.
So Madhouse were no longer really extant. And so what happened was Prince, the purple one, put out a jazz fusion album under the name Madhouse. And Tommy Keane's brother, Bobby Keane, worked with us to get a small, and it was a very modest chunk of money out of Prince. I think if I had saved the check with his rubber stamp signature on it, it probably would have been worth more now than the actual money we got. But what we did with the money is, you know, what every band would do in those days. We squandered it on, you know, drugs and musical equipment. And I bought a secondhand van from a guy out in PG County that was this beautiful brown stretch van that had been carpeted on the inside with like velvet and brown. It was obviously some like ex-pimp's van. And this was the Strange Boutique van for, you know, as long as we were in the band together. And I could tell stories about that as well that Hunter and Terry are familiar with, but this is a family show. So
that's right.
But yeah, so the Prince thing is true. We got $10,000, which in hindsight was stupid of me. But when you're a young guy and somebody says, hey, they're offering you $10,000, that's probably as good as it's going to get. Yeah. You say, yeah, give me the money.
Yeah. So, I'm rich. I'm set.
Yeah. In hindsight, I'd like to go back and sue him again. But
yeah, right, right. That, so. No, that's a great story. Yeah. And such an interesting band, too. And I very much echo that. I remember seeing you guys on bills where it was just so different. You know, Strange Boutique, they had a black guitar player, woman, you know, a lead female singer doing all kinds of stuff that was, yeah, goth, you know, some UK influences that were really strong. It was a really interesting group.
Yeah, I mean, the bands that were, I guess, the biggest influences on us at the time were The Chameleons, The Cure, and then Killing Joke. And we did some shows with Killing Joke in the States. We did a little mini tour with them. And they brought us to England to do some shows with them as well. Amazing guys. But Susie and the Banshees was the band that everybody likened us to because there weren't a lot of other bands at that time aside from maybe Fire Party that had female singers in the DC scene. And we used to have a lot of problems too. I mean, I remember doing a show at the Wilson Center where I had to jump out from behind my drum set in the middle of the set and like challenge a bunch of skinheads to brawl in the middle of the set because, you know, they would hurl like the most horrible abuse you could imagine at a female singer. So, you know.
Yeah, it was that was a problem. And it certainly was.
Hey, Danny, wasn't Kim Fowley going to make Strange Boutique stars?
Kim Fowley wanted to sign us to a production deal, and I'm a big Washington Capitals fan, and he was working with a guy who owned a studio here in D.C. whose family owned a Sky Suite at the old Capitol Center. And so while they were like trying to work out the contract details and so forth, and Kim Fowley, for those of you who don't know, he's a famous guy. I mean, not just for writing songs, but his biggest claim to fame is he discovered the Runaways. He managed them. He raped them, all sorts of things. He was a really horrible human being.
Yeah.
I was getting all these free Capitals tickets and bringing all my friends to the Sky Suite for like 3 months. And then when the season was over, I called him up and I said, yeah, you know, we were thinking about it and I just don't think it's going to work out. And he said, I know where you live, Danny. I've got a gun and I'm going to kill you. And I said, wow, that's really changing my mind. Maybe I do want to work with you. So, Kim Fowley wanted to, and he actually wanted to turn Monica into the next Joan Jett. That was his vision for the band. And it just wasn't compatible with what we were doing, which, as you said, and which Hunter and Terry remind me of all the time. Yes, it was a very gothy sort of band. So
it really was.
Yeah.
It was refreshing. I always really enjoyed seeing you guys.
All right. So I think we're going to wrap up this episode now, but you guys are going to stick around overnight and come back tomorrow, right?
That's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The kids can take care of themselves and all that.
That's right. Fine. They'll be fine.
We got some, you know, bed rolls.
Good.
That's right.
So, yeah. We're fine. All right. Well, thanks very much, Dot Dash, for being on the show.
Yeah, and, thank you, guys.
You know, I mentioned you're going to be back tomorrow because people want to listen to the show, Barrett.
Every day.
Every day. Barrett says, yes. Yeah. How often, Katie? Yeah, there you go. You can hear us on all the big podcast platforms. Please tell a friend, as we mentioned in our promo. That would really help us out. And also, you can email us rock@suburbspod.com. You can call the Suburban Party Line.
Do that.
612-440-1984.
Nice.
Feel free to speak up. You know,
it's okay.
Maybe they need more beer.
Yeah, there is beer out there.
The keg is on the back deck. If you guys, I forgot to mention that earlier. Yeah. So go for that. Also, Oh yeah, find us on the social medias of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. And I mentioned we'll try to get some videos up and stuff like that from the show too. So, and then and of course you're gonna want to listen to this whole series because at the end these guys are gonna perform right here in the family room.
Yeah,
right
in the suburban family room.
We're all set up. We got the drums and everything. It's gonna be really cool. So you guys are gonna want to hear that. All right, so. They'll be back tomorrow, but in the meantime, we're going to close out. Do you have a particular song you like to hear?
Or? From the new album, you want to play Green on Red?
Yes, I do want to play Green on Red. That's an awesome song. All right. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us is Dot Dash.
Hunter Bennett.
Terry Banks.
Danny Ingram.
Thanks a lot, guys. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Good night. Woo!
These things we don't Patrick and I don't get together every day as much as we would like to, right?
That's right.
Yes, yeah, we would. Mm-hmm. But we don't, so we batch record. We do several of them at a time, and that's what you're going to experience tonight. So, and then with the magic of the internet, it appears as if it's everyday experience.
I bought 4 changes of clothes, if that
helps. Yeah, that would help actually for the gig.